If you take a tour of a flagship research university like UNH or Dartmouth, you'll see some pretty expensive stuff, like wave tanks.
So we're standing now in the engineering bay in the Chase Ocean Engineering Building at UNH.
Professor Brian Calder explains that the two wave tanks here are used to test sonar of the type now scouring the floor of the Indian Ocean, searching for the missing Malaysia Airlines plane. The tanks are also used to simulate waves washing over ocean aquaculture nets. They're huge and very specialized. They can't be chlorinated because it would interfere with the sonar, and so they're pumped twice a day through special filters.
That's one of the things that's expensive, but it's not something we could do without. Because it's essential to be able to test the equipment before we take it out.
Then there's the Cray supercomputer, which looks like a bunch of side-by-side vending machines with planets and galaxies splashed across the front. Patrick Messer, director of research computing at UNH, lets me stare at it.
So what's it doing right now?
It's running a lot of jobs, and it's doing a lot of space physics work, and there's other research groups on campus as well that are using it.
The computer, including its special room and air conditioning, cost more than $1 million. A little less than half came from grants, and UNH paid for the rest. Jan Nisbet, the senior vice provost for research at UNH, says in the research world, state-of-the-art facilities help attract grants. Sometimes you get to spend money to get money.
We fully intend and to get it back within 3 to 5 years.
This is the way research funding works these days. But that's been changing. Professor John Aber has been conducting grant-funded research for more than 2 decades. He says, for one, research isn't as cheap as it used to be.
Again, the easy questions you could do with the simple things, the yardstick in the field sort of things have been done. And the questions are more challenging, and you do need more expensive equipment.
But also, there are more scientists vying for those grants.
The first time I submitted a proposal to the National Science Foundation, the acceptance rate was over 50%. Now it's about 10.
And these days, grants, which mostly rely on federal funding, almost always come with strings attached. Some require universities to put up matching dollars, and they cap the amount that schools can seek to pay operating costs that support the research. There are also higher standards of reporting and accountability. Ronald Ehrenberg, a Cornell professor who studies the economics of higher education, says the upshot of all of this is that undergrads bear more of the cost of research. Ehrenberg says more research means
student-faculty ratios go up, and a greater share of the teaching is done by non-tenure-track faculties.
His analysis shows research spending has an additional effect at private schools.
When institutional expenditures on research go up, tuition also goes up.
Wow. Okay. So I think basically I would say no.
John Cool is a biochemist and dean of graduate studies at Dartmouth. He notes, as college administrators do, that what an undergraduate owes in tuition isn't the true cost of the education they're getting. He says a year at Dartmouth really costs around $100,000. But thanks to endowment returns, grants, and donations, tuition is $60,000. Dartmouth has its own expensive facilities, most of which have to do with medical research. Cool shows me a set of what he calls pipetters in one chemistry lab.
This is just for delivering very accurate volumes of liquid. And every biochemistry lab at Dartmouth is going to have a set of these for every person. And these are probably, a couple hundred dollars, $500 each. So
it
adds up. And this is why the startup cost for a lab can be $1 million.
But all told, Cool says the cost of research is small compared to the benefits.
The expenses of research are maybe, 1.3 times the amount of the awards. So I think all in all, I'd look at that the money that's going towards research more as an investment in research in the same way that we're investing in our students.
He also says they're investing in knowledge itself. And if a research university isn't doing this work, who would? What's more, slashing research could mean the students wouldn't be able to interact with the top minds who are looking to do research.
A lot of the professors here, including myself, we wouldn't be able to do research and we wouldn't be here. We would have to go somewhere else.
For plenty of students, that's something to be concerned about. Junior Max Renke is a computer science major at UNH.
You can definitely go through UNH to get the degree and not do research, but I think you're kind of missing out if you do that.
The numbers indicate that most students do miss out. UNH says 31% of its students do their own research. Dartmouth says the number there is at least 20%. All over the country, that number is on the rise. But across the board, most students are like UNH communications majors Emily Miller and Christina Park.
I see it on like the UNH page when I go on it, but I don't know much about it.
Yeah, I'd have to say I don't really know anything about it, any research.
But that may change. Research spending is on the rise at UNH, up from 25% of the school's budget a decade ago to nearly 37%. Cornell economist Aaron Berg thinks as tuitions also continue to climb, universities will be challenged to justify the research spending.
I think that this is sort of something that the research universities are going to have to grope with. How much can they continue to load the cost of research on the backs of undergraduate students?
So expect to hear these schools talking more about the value of all this research, not just to their students, but to society as a whole. For NHPR News, I'm Sam Evans-Brown.